You're listening to Lateral Media. Welcome back to my podcast. My name is Monica, this is SBC, and this is part 2 of Reading King, The Wastelands, book 3 in the Dark Tower series. If you haven't listened to part 1, it was released a few weeks ago, and you can do so by checking your podcast app, whichever you're using right now. A couple things before we get started. This is a Reading King episode, as in Stephen King, which means I don't hold back on spoilers. I spoil all the books. If you haven't read The Wastelands yet and you don't want to ruin your reading experience, please refrain from listening to this episode. You can come back after you've read the book. I'll be here still. And yes, repeating what I said in part 1, The Wastelands is the third book in the Dark Tower series. It came out in 1991 and it is the first book to really give us an idea, a concrete idea of what's happening, like of what the story is about. It is also the first book in which all the main heroes, our Katet, come together. For all these reasons, it is one of my favorite books in the series. When I read it for this episode, it was my third time reading it, and I think it was the most enjoyable read of all three. And that's something I feel happens a lot with King. Whenever you go back to one of his works and you are much older and more mature, I feel like you enjoy it a little bit more than the first time around. Okay, so The Wastelands is divided into two parts. Book 1 is titled Jake, Fear in a Handful of Dust, and I covered all of it in the previous episode. Book 2 is our topic today. It is titled Lead, A Heap of Broken Images, and it is made up of three parts, just like Book 1 was. The parts are Town and Katet, Bridge and City, and Riddle and Wastelands. So, starting with Town and Katet. We begin here just 4 days after the drawing of Jake. It's that moment of getting to know each other because Jake doesn't know Eddie and Susanna, and Eddie and Susanna don't know Jake. And even Jake and Roland, I feel like they still have to spend some time getting comfortable around each other again, because now the context of their situation is a little bit different, right? Jake knows what's going on now, he's not as clueless as he was in the desert, and Roland carries all the guilt for letting him fall in the first book. But they all get along just fine. I feel like they are hesitant to trust each other too much at first, but it feels so right for all of them to be together right there and then that it's all good. Jake meets a Billy Bumbler that is kind of following them. This is an animal that is described as being similar to a raccoon, and Roland explains that once upon a time when things were still good in his world, they were able to talk, like humans. So they are perceived to be very intelligent creatures, much like our dogs, but imagine talking dogs. So after the world has gone to shit, Bumblers stopped talking, but this particular one still talks a little bit, and Roland thinks that this is why he was alone, like his family probably abandoned him because he was different. Jake talks to him, saying things like, "Come here, boy," and the Bumbler repeats the end of what he hears, so he repeats "Oi." They end up calling him Oi, and he becomes a part of the Katet as well. On their way to Lud, which is the city that is in front of them, on the path of the beam, they come across some mutants, all animals just trying to survive. And I love the fact that they are there because they don't do nothing to the story, but they help us visualize and understand Roland's world a little bit better. But yeah, they arrive at a town called River Crossing, in which they meet a group of old people that somehow survived until then. they all get very excited with their presence there, especially with Roland's presence. Let's not forget that he is a gunslinger, the last of his kind. Nobody believes gunslingers still exist. And there he is, the knight, the hero, right in front of them. So they cry, they get very emotional, and the general sense is that the wheel of Kai is turning again. After many, many years of bad news and suffering, this man, the White, as they call him, has come to try and make things right. And Roland acts the part. I love when he plays the hero, the gunslinger, you know, which is something that he does again in future books. I'm not going to spoil them now, but I love it when he does that because it says a lot about his sense of duty, about the responsibility that he has being who he is. Not only he is the last gunslinger, but he is of the line of Eld, which means he's kind of the descendant of King Arthur. He's very proud of that, but he's very aware at the same time of the responsibilities that brings and of the weight that he carries. And actually, he just wants to get to the Dark Tower, and we readers know how broken he is. We know the truth, right? So it's very nice for us and for the rest of the quartet to see him being adored by these people who were really just abandoned by the world. Aunt Talitha is their leader, she is the oldest of them all, and she offers them a feast in celebration of Roland. During the feast, they start talking about Lud and the possible dangers that lie ahead, and they talk about a train, which immediately piques Jake's interest. One of them tells the quartet that she used to hear a locomotive that made trips between Lud and the wastelands, which lie beyond the city, years ago, but she's contradicted by other members of her group. This information will, of course, be of value in a bit. When they leave River Crossing, Aunt Talitha gives Roland a silver cross that she's been wearing for a century, and she asks him to place it at the foot of the Dark Tower once he reaches it. Okay, during a night palaver, which is when the quartet gets together to share ideas and plans, they talk about the train, and Jake tells them about the two books that he's brought with him, Charlie the Choo-Choo and the Book of Riddles. They don't understand the relevance of the books, but they know they will be important, that the train will be important. So even though they know Lud is dangerous, because the people of River Crossing told them about a civil war that is still happening there, even though they know all of that, they decide to go to Lud and look for the train. That leads us to the second part of Book 2, Bridge and City. When they are approaching Lud, the quartet finds the mummified remains of a man inside the wreckage of a World War II plane that has a swastika on the side. This man was David Quick, the one who led one side of the Civil War in the Battle of Lud, which is something Aunt Talitha told them about during their feast back in River Crossing. So, that's interesting. They've also been hearing a drum beat that goes on and off at scheduled times, and when they get close enough to Lud, Eddie recognizes it as the song Velcro Fly by ZZ Top. Just another weird thing connecting both our worlds. But they also hear gunfire when they get close enough, which is a clear sign that there are still people living in there and that they are still fighting their civil war. They come upon this bridge that is hanging by a thread, and Eddie is terrified. It's the first time we see him like that, because he is afraid of heights. So they have to cross the bridge, which is described as being very similar to the George Washington Bridge. Susanna is on Roland's shoulders, Jake and Oi are next, and then Eddie is carrying Susanna's wheelchair. The bridge is swinging because of the wind. It's a very tricky crossing, but Jake is loving it. He's having the time of his life. So they're crossing this hole on the bridge. They're just walking, like balancing along this metal beam. This is the part where the bridge is hanging by a thread, which is kind of like in the middle of the bridge. When Jake reaches the other side of the beam, he looks back and sees Oi still hasn't started walking on the beam yet, because the poor thing is terrified as well. So he tries to help Oi. Oi falls, and Jake jumps after him. I think he uses his leg to hold on to the beam. This is when Eddie forgets about his own fear and dives in to save both Jake and Oi. When they're finally safe, still in the middle of the bridge, but on the tarmac, they are surprised by a dying man called Gasher who wants to get Jake. So Gasher walks and talks like a pirate, and he's literally dying. He has sores all over his body, open wounds, blood all over. It's really disgusting. And he threatens to detonate the grenade he's holding unless they hand over Jake. Roland agrees, but of course he has a plan to get Jake back, and he whispers into Jake's ear. He tells him not to worry, that he will go after him, and for him to walk toward a dying man, that it will be fine. And Jake goes because he knows Roland is not lying. But Eddie freaks out with Roland, and this is the part he gets really annoying, because, dude, you've been traveling with him for months. You've been through hell together more than once, and you still don't believe he has a plan? You know, it's really annoying of Eddie. He's not very perceptive. He's the least perceptive of them all, and that makes him get into this argument with Roland several times. But yeah, Gasher and Jake go away, and Roland tells Eddie and Susanna to go look for the train while Oi and him will go after Jake. As Jake is running in front of Gasher, Gasher pushes him, threatens him with sexual assault. He's pretty nasty, and he keeps guiding Jake with his punches. So they turn this way and that to avoid booby traps set by Gasher's people, known as the Greys, until they get to a manhole cover that they open to descend into an underground labyrinth that will lead them to the Greys' hiding place. Meanwhile, Eddie and Susanna come across the other gang that inhabits the city, the Pubes. These are simple-minded people, they're quite superstitious, and they believe ghosts roam the city and the machines. By then, Eddie and Susanna have already realized that the Greys are the ones who control the machines, or at least part of them. They are the ones who play Velcro Fly several times during the day. And this is really smart, because what it does to the Pubes is it makes them sacrifice one of their own to the drum god, or something like this, every time the song plays. So they don't even have to engage in battle to diminish the Pubes' numbers. Eddie and Susanna kill some of the Pubes that attack them. They try to explain to the rest that they are being manipulated, but the others are not very inclined to listen, so Eddie makes them take them to the railway station. The Pubes don't want to get too close because they are afraid, but they do take Eddie and Susanna to the station and the place where Blaine the Mono sleeps. Turns out Blaine is a machine that has its own will, and he is bored and cruel, which is not a very good combination. Eddie and Susanna wake him up and start to negotiate with him and convince him that he can't kill them. Blaine is not only alive, awake, bored and cruel, he's also addicted to riddles, which is pretty convenient to the Katet. The couple tells Blaine that their friends have a book full of riddles, and that is enough for Blaine to keep them alive for now. Underground, Gasher leads Jake to the HQ of the Greys and to his boss, the TikTok Man, who is the great-grandson of David Quick, the mummy we saw earlier inside that plane with the swastika. The TikTok Man is called the TikTok Man because he is obsessed with clocks and technology and machines, and he is interested in Jake because Jake is wearing a wristwatch that started walking backwards once he crossed over to Midworld. Jake doesn't know it, but Roland caught up to him and Gasher pretty quickly, and he's been tracking them all along, not too far behind. So what he does is he puts Oi inside the duct system and tells Oi to observe and report. But then Jake sees Oi up in the vent, and when the bumbler sees Jake being tortured, he doesn't think twice. He jumps down to attack the TikTok Man. At the same time, Roland is trying to telepathically tell Jake to unlock the door for him, but Jake is so desperate to save Oi that he doesn't hear the gunslinger. Instead, he grabs a gun and shoots at the TikTok Man. Right then, Blaine unlocks the door for Roland. They only realize it was Blaine later on, but he does it, and Roland is able to get into the room and kill the remaining Greys. Blaine speaks up and tells them to follow his lead, so they end up following this steel sphere through the labyrinth and up to the railway station, where they reunite with Eddie and Susanna. So Blaine decides to eliminate the rest of the city, and he is going to release a gas that will kill everybody. However, if the Katet can solve a riddle in less than 10 minutes, he will take them out of the city and save them. And then we cut back to the TikTok man, who, surprise, is not dead. So this mysterious figure appears to him and saves him and talks him into getting his revenge. But this is the last we see of the TikTok man in this book. There's a lot of action going on. It seems like the story is going to end here, but there's still another part to go. So we begin Riddle and Wastelands. The Katet manages to solve Blaine's riddle, and they get inside the train with seconds to spare. Inside, they find a sculpture resembling Roland, which Blaine created to please them, and that's only a taste of his madness. He also makes himself disappear, like he makes the walls of the train disappear, so the people inside can feel like they're flying. But poisonous gas is being released right below them, and Blaine makes them watch as people die screaming and bleeding. And after they cross the city's limit, they are faced with the Wastelands, which is basically hell. Lava flowing, creatures that are not human nor animal crawl around. It's pretty horrid. They beg Blaine to bring the walls back, and he does. Blaine keeps saying he will kill them if their riddles are not good enough, and Roland once again plays the part of the gunslinger and fights Blaine with his words instead of his bullets. So riddles were very much a part of Roland's childhood. He studied riddles at school, and there was this thing called Fair Day when they would organize a riddle contest, which was very popular. So Roland challenges Blaine. If they can make a riddle that he cannot solve, he will let them go free. If not, they will be killed. Blaine is pretty excited for that, and their competition begins right when the book ends. It's unfortunate that King chose to close the book here, especially because with the Dark Tower, he never knew if he was going to continue it or not, or when he was going to do it. So it was a pretty bold move. Knowing the contents of Wizard and Glass, which is the next volume, I'd argue that there could have been a better division, but we know he doesn't plot, right? King doesn't plot. So for all he knew back then, the Katet could have died 10 minutes after the competition with Blaine started. Spoiler alert, they didn't. We still have 4 books to go in the series, but Wizard and Glass is not the topic of the next Reading King episode. The next book I'm going to spoil for you is Needful Things. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for following the podcast. And I'll see you next time. Bye. Esta foi uma produção Lateral Media. Se você gostou do programa, talvez você goste do Uma Batata e Uma Coquinha, um podcast em português, onde um jogador experiente e uma novata falam sobre jogos. Você também pode gostar do Inglês para Mulheres, um podcast de cursos em áudio, onde cada temporada lidará com uma habilidade diferente da língua inglesa. A primeira temporada é sobre writing e está completa e disponível para você. Confira todos os programas em monicasanoli.com.br/lateral-media, M-E-D-I-A, mídia em inglês. Ou clique no link na descrição deste episódio. Obrigada por ouvir!